KETR presents Texas Scribes, featuring literary works by authors in Northeast Texas. Welcome to the reading of Pamela Haskin's book, A Deliberate Life, A Journey into the Alaskan Wilderness, read by Jan Hilton of Commerce.
Chapter 1, The Glint of Steel. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. Henry David Thoreau. With both hands cupped around my face, I leaned against the cold window pane and peered out into the night, squinting to try and bring the dark images into focus. Nothing but darkness. No matter. I already knew what was out there. A foot of new snow blanketed the 3 feet we already had. A dense forest of 60-foot-tall spruce trees, limbs heavy with the new-fallen snow, encircled the clearing our one-room log cabin occupied. A narrow foot trail at the edge of the clearing led to the gravel road more than a half a mile away. The thermometer nailed to the window frame registered 20 degrees below zero, and the nearest person was more than 5 miles away. Even Jeff, my husband, was gone. He was away at work for another week in the oil fields at Prudhoe Bay along the north coast of Alaska. Oh, well, I sighed, turning away from the window. At least I was warm and safe inside the cabin. Or so I thought. It was kind of late for dinner, nearly 10 p.m., but I was hungry. Besides, I reasoned, I would need the energy to repack the trail and uncover the woodpile in the morning. Small pieces of chicken sizzled and popped as I slid them off the cutting board with the blade of my knife into a waiting pan of hot oil. I stirred in a little garlic and lemon pepper. Soon the smell of dinner filled my small cabin. Sana, my yellow lab, roused from her peaceful lounging and sniffed the air. "Don't worry, I'll save you a bite," I said. Her ears perked up and her tail wagged. Then she stood up, circled around, and lay back down on the same spot of painted plywood floor. With my dinner cooking, I reached for a towel to wipe down the counter. As I did, the towel caught on the tip of the knife I had used to cut the chicken. The knife flew off the counter. I felt its weight bounce against my arm and hand as the steel blade, glinting unusually bright in the soft glow of the kerosene lamp, clattered to rest at my feet. Hesitantly, I looked down. I saw a deep gash on the side of my hand between my wrist and my little finger. For just an instant, as I raised my hand for a closer look, I saw muscle tissue in a thin layer of fat. Then, just as quickly, blood filled the cut and began to pour down my forearm toward my elbow. I knew from my first aid training that this cut was a bad one. It was bleeding heavily and needed stitches. The nearest medical help was 3 hours away by gravel road and across 3 mountain passes. The road was sometimes impassable for days at a time in winter when wind and snow closed the road with drifts as high as 10 feet. Knowing I first had to stop the bleeding, I fumbled with the latch on the first aid kit with my right hand while trying to keep blood from my left hand spilling over its contents. I tore open a package of sterile gauze and pressed it tight against the cut. I began to pace. I breathed too fast. I snapped at Sana when she went to investigate the knife still lying on the floor. The adrenaline rushing through my veins was making me panicky. Blood quickly saturated the gauze pad and began to drip from both elbows and splatter along the floor as I paced. I sat down cross-legged on the floor and tried to slow my breathing. I drew in a deep breath but released it too quickly. "Oh, God," I pleaded, "please calm me down and show me what to do. I can't do this alone." As I continued to apply pressure to the wound, I quickly considered my options. Jeff wasn't due home for another week. We had no phone service in our area, so I couldn't phone for help. The nearest person whom I knew had first aid training was more than 10 miles away. The snowmobile, my usual mode of winter transportation when Jeff was at work, was no help. Its rope pull start was difficult at best for me to start with 2 hands, much less 1 when temperatures dropped below 0. Walking out to get help was not an option. One thing I had learned living in the Alaskan bush is that under no circumstances do you ever take the elements for granted. The dark cold demands respect. Even if I could have gotten a mitten on my injured hand, I would certainly have had frostnip, if not frostbite, by the time I reached help. The cold wind would have also quickly drained the power from the batteries in my flashlight long before I got to help, leaving me to find my way in the dark. I was on my own. Poor Sana. She moved away from me. The tip of her tail flicked back and forth the way it does when she's nervous and unsure. "It's okay, pup," I said quietly, more to myself than to her. 30 minutes passed. The cut was still bleeding heavily. Blood pooled in ever-widening circles on my jeans where my elbows rested on my legs. My right arm ached from applying pressure to the cut. I felt lightheaded. My peripheral vision grew darker and darker. My field of view narrowed to a small round spot of light directly in front of me. I fought for control. I forced myself to take deep cleansing breaths as I struggled to stay alert. The next 10 minutes passed slowly. Once again, I gently lifted the gauze pad. At last, the bleeding was slowing. "Thank you, God," I said aloud and breathed a sigh of relief. "But now what? I need stitches, but obviously I couldn't do that myself." I rummaged through the first aid kit again with my right hand and found Steri-Strips, narrow pieces of tape doctors often place across an incision once stitches have been removed. Holding my breath, I gingerly placed several Steri-Strips across the cut. I began to breathe more easily over the next few minutes as I watched for any continued bleeding. At last, it seemed to have ceased. I wrapped my hand in sterile gauze and hoped for the best. I didn't remember doing it, but at some point I must have turned off the flame under the chicken. Cold and thoroughly saturated with oil, my dinner still sat on the front burner of the propane stove. "Want some chicken?" I asked Sana. I cleaned the floor the best I could with one hand. I put my jeans to soak in cold water that I had collected earlier in the day by melting snow. Then I crawled into bed. Sleep eluded me. I propped my throbbing hand a little higher on my pillow and called down to Sana to quit snoring. She readjusted herself on her blanket and fell back asleep. She started snoring again. I thought of my mother far away in Texas. She and most everyone else I knew had told me I was crazy to follow Jeff to the Alaskan wilderness 4 years earlier. Sometimes, on lonely nights like that one, I too began to question my sanity.